But just on this point of the food deserts and the fact that we're looking really, we should be thinking of it as a public health disaster.
The trick is to use the Western medical model for diagnosis and then the integrative medical model for treatment.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's just wonderful to be here with you again on another Friday. This is an earlier pre-record. It's not 7 p.m., but I still have my chai tea here. And it's this time, remember last time I told you the coconut milk, not so good? This time I did make the homemade almond milk, so it's much, much better. I love homemade almond milk, by the way. And so anyway, I'm probably still going to need my caffeine, even though it's still not 7 p.m. tonight. But we've got two amazing guests on, and to accommodate everybody's schedule, here it is Friday afternoon. And this is so fascinating. This is a topic we haven't covered, and I don't know why we haven't covered it, because, I have children myself and grandchildren. And when I read their book, I was just, blown away and disheartened and heartened all at the same time, shall I say. The name of their book is What's Making Our Children Sick? How Industrial Food is Causing an Epidemic of Chronic Illness and What Parents and Doctors Can Do About It. And one of the things, I'm just going to read right from the book because I was just astonished that today, 1 in 13 American children have a serious food allergy, a rate that increased by 50% in the last 2 decades. And nearly 9% of our kids have asthma. I'm just reading these and I'm like, wow, you'd think with all the so-called scientific increases, what's going on? And that's a dramatic increase, they say, from 1980. And the prevalence of childhood eczema and atopic dermatitis is 10.7% and as high as 18% in certain states. I'm just like, wow. And this one, I'll end with this one because I could just keep going on, but more than 1.6 million Americans have Crohn's disease and colitis, and 1 in 10 is a child. Oh my gosh. If you don't know what Crohn's disease or colitis is, both of those awful, awful, awful. Anyway, let me introduce our guests and we'll get right into this topic because it's profound. And I learned so much about the book, not just if you say, well, Sharon, I don't have a child in my life. Maybe you know someone with a child in their life you could share this book about. But I also learned a lot about myself and my diet, because if it's making your kids sick, it's probably making you sick too. So our first guest is Michelle Peraro, and she is a veteran pediatrician with over 35 years of experience in acute and integrative medicine. She has both directed and worked as an attending physician at New York's Metropolitan Hospital. She's currently lecturing and consulting and working with Gordon Medical Associates, an integrative health center in Northern California. And then we also have Vincent Adams, who is a professor and vice chair of medical anthropology at the University of California, San Francisco. She's previously published 6 books on the social dynamics of health, scientific knowledge and politics, and is currently the editor of the Medical Anthropology Quarterly. Both of them, they just co-authored this brand new book by Chelsea Green Publishing. And as I said, the title is What is Making Our Children Sick? How Industrial Food is Causing an Epidemic of Chronic Illness and What Parents and Doctors Can Do About It. So I'm just going to say hello to Michelle first, because we're doing both video and audio today. So the audio participants can know whose voice is whose. So Hi, Michelle. Introduce yourself really quickly for us.
Good morning, Sharon. Just a delight to be here and really love what you're doing for the community.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. So that was Michelle Perro. And
Perro.
Yeah. I can never even roll my R's either, so Perro. And Vince Ann Adams. Vince Ann, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Sharon. It's great to be here, and thanks for reading our book.
Like I said in the opening, it both made me sad and glad that it was sad when I was reading all about the things that are still happening. And I kept saying, why is this still going on? So let's talk a little bit about what brought both of you to the idea of writing this book. Michelle, why don't you start?
Well, I can start with that because what prompted me was the shift in children's health, which I began witnessing about 15 to 20 years ago. And as you mentioned, Sharon, my background's in pediatric emergency medicine. I was a pediatric emergency physician for many years working at various institutions. But eventually, I shifted into my own clinic doing blended urgent care with integrative medicine. And the alarming rate of sick children, both chronic and something I call acute on chronic, where kids are sick, but their baseline is chronic disease, was so shocking that I felt that I needed to write a book. We can go into how I got there. But serendipitously, hiking with my wonderful and talented neighbor, Vincent, one morning, you know, we're chatting about what we do, and she told me she was an author, a medical professor, a medical anthropology, and she wrote 6 books, and I told her about this book sitting on my desktop for years, unwritten, because I couldn't put my tushy in a chair after working all day. Doctors are in chairs a lot in front of their screens, by the way. We are sitting a lot. It's awful. And Vincent agreed to help me write it. And we did it together as this joint project, which turned out to be serendipitously beautiful. The clinician with the broader vision of the medical anthropologist. I couldn't ask for a better marriage.
It was fabulous. I have to tell, it was very comprehensive. And like I said, it was disheartening and heartening all at the same time. But my question, Vincent, from a historical perspective, let's talk a little bit about how did we get here? Because with all of our knowledge of nutrition, everything else, it's still going on.
Right. And it's kind of shocking for me, you know, as a medical anthropologist, I spent many years working in other contexts in developing countries where we have really high rates of infant mortality and children under 5 dying at massive rates. And it was kind of interesting for me to realize that when I was listening to Michelle talk about her practice and the rising epidemic of chronic illness among kids, it tapped into something that people in my field in medical anthropology had been also paying attention to for a long time, which is the problem of the medical model in our country not being focused on chronic problems, but being really expert at taking care of acute crisis-oriented care. Surgeries, transplantations, that kind of thing. But we were really dropped the ball on these chronic systemic problems. In fact, people were going without care in many cases. And so I was really fascinated by what Michelle was telling me about and thought she really was hitting on and kind of filling a gap that had formed in our medical system. So I became really interested in writing about that. At the same time, she was talking about her theory that maybe all of this was related to the changes in food in our society. Mm. And I really have to confess that I was skeptical when I first heard this. and yet, because I was like willing to help her, I thought, well, this will make a really good book for me, an ethnography of what's going on here in our current crisis. And I jumped in and started doing interviews of her patients with her and shadowing her in the clinic and then reading up on the science about our food system. And that's where I really said, okay, this is a really interesting project and one that's right up my alley in terms of talking about the politics of knowledge and the politics of health. So what we tried to do in the book, other than just telling the great story about what Michelle was doing, was figure out this bigger set of problems. We call it, you know, the perfect storm, which is a cataclysm of at least 3 things. One is a reluctant medical profession that is having a hard time dealing with chronic problems because of the basic medical model and an unwillingness to really take food seriously. then we have the problem of a food regulatory system that's really full of holes and isn't protecting us. And then we have the problem of very controversial sciences in and around the shift in our food supply system to using genetically modified techniques of agriculture. And wow, those three things have created what might be called the conspiracy of insult, I would call it, that is leaving a lot of our kids sick and a lot of people frustrated.
And as I read that, one of the things that came to my mind and was that, in a way, I felt food changed my life when I understood that food was what got me to my autoimmune condition. At least that was my theory of it. It was been totally rebuffed by a number of the specialists and professionals, I thought. In fact, the very first high-level rheumatologist I got to see at the height of the disease, I walked in and he said, "So what have you been doing so far?" And I explained I was working on stress and I was eating better. And I went on to say how I was eating organically and filtered water. And he, in all seriousness, looked me in the eye and said, "None of that is going to help." And I'll tell you, I looked at him. I'm a little sassy. As people know on the show, I can be a little snarky. I looked him at the eye and said, "It's not going to hurt." And I said, the problem with that was then this little evil twin on my shoulder whispered in my ear, "See, I told you you could have had that chocolate milkshake." So unfortunately, sometimes we don't get the support we need. But as I was reading the book, I realized sort of how my even thinking I was eating healthy got me here, because Michelle and I were talking earlier. I'm from the TV tray food, you know, the TV dinner generation. So, Michelle, you had an interesting comment. Will you share that with the audience about these pre-processed meals that we were so popular and we were told were so nutritious from my childhood?
Absolutely, Sharon, TV dinner achiever here as well. I thought fruits and veggies came in a can. The only vegetables we got were peas and carrots in a can growing up.
Either that or in the little corner of the tray.
And when I got to college and saw a salad bar, I didn't know what it was. Okay, so enough of my little personal story there. But when those foods first came out, they were designed to meet the demand of moms going back to work. That's how KFC first advertised their food. And initially, even I am not supporting fast foods here, but when McDonald's and KFC and those type of organizations, the TV dinners first came out, they were actually not bad and relatively healthy. Like hamburgers were real meat and the chicken was real chicken. There were fewer additives, obviously no genetically modified food, and way fewer pesticides. And we can go into why genetically modified food has increased the amount of pesticides in our food, which is a massive problem and contributing to the massive problem with our kids' health. So initially brought in for those moms leaving the kitchen. Why only moms in the kitchen? That's another conversation that we need to have. And not so bad, but that has changed. It's not that way anymore.
Well, one thing I've noticed is it may not be that way anymore, but how many of, I was brought up also in the generation where girls had to attend home ec, which we don't have to get into that either, but I did learn to cook. And I have noticed so many young people just don't know how to cook. They don't have the, if it doesn't, like, oh, I boil the water, you know, empty the can or empty the box and boil it into the boiling water. That's how I cook. And I think that, to me, is also another part of it. But I want to get into the, both of you jump into this idea of what can we do now? Because, okay, the history is, but, okay, we're here now. And this idea of genetically modified foods is so terrifying to me. As I've been reading more about it, that even things like how drift happens, so it can even be part of our organic food supply and we don't even know it. So there's so many things, so many places I want to go with this, but let's just jump into what can we do about it now? How can we help our kids?
Well, I can start and Vincent, you can jump in. There's many places for change to happen. Often when we ask people to change, they get overwhelmed. Too many things. And the change.
Yeah, as you could tell when I read your book, that's what happened.
Oh my God. And so we don't want to kind of ignite fear in people because, you know, letting go of cultural customs can be scary for people. So we sometimes it has to happen slowly. Some moms with sick kids, parents, they are so tired of their kids being sick, they jump in full into the water. So it's very variable. So change needs to happen and people can do this themselves at the home, at the personal level. It can happen in people's communities, schools, counties, where we can talk about what's happening in our own county. Massive stopping of spraying here in our county in Northern California, and at the societal level, which Vincent goes into so beautifully. But what they tell the parents, and this sounds so common sense, and if people don't get this after reading our book, I don't know, I think we didn't do our job, that they have to start with eating organic food. That genetically modified food and the associated pesticides with it is so pervasive in our food supply, and particularly in processed foods, that if they don't switch to organic, whether they have chronic disease or not, or just minor issues, they're not going to get well. So even if I employ the best medical strategies to help people get well, and complex chronic disease often requires many interventions, not just changing diet, the clinical improvements that are manifested are not sustained. So it has to happen with going organic. And then we talk to parents, I talk to them how to do that so it's affordable, because usually dads are freaking out when they see the prices of the bills going up. But when you look at the big bill of healthcare costs and days missed from work when parents are staying home with sick kids, by the way, it's actually much less. If they
That's
do
a
that.
Good point. That's
so
a
yeah,
good point.
That is how the varicella vaccine got started, by the way. It was looking at, because it's such a long window that people have to stay home with chickenpox, 3 weeks, parents lost so much work, it was impetus to start the vaccine back in the 80s. But not to go off track, because we want to stay on topic here. So we look at food, we look at water, internal milieu, and we look at the external milieu, reducing the environmental toxins and toxicants in the kid's external world. From things like taking shoes off at the door, to parents not spraying toxins in their own gardens, to cleaning products, personal care products, what kind of water bottle we're using, you know, getting people off plastic. So we go into that a lot. But so it's an awareness, a rise in consciousness regarding what we put in our mouths, like Europeans do. This is not, I mean, I don't think Vincent and I said anything so extraordinary here. And to reducing the overall, what we call allostatic load in medicine, reducing the amount of the toxins and toxicants kids have to process, because their detoxification mechanisms are often not as good as adults or impaired.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot to take in. Vincent, I know it is. It's a lot to take in, especially with our kids. I mean, you get personal about your health, but as a mom, I got hyper-personal when it's about my kids. Vincent, what are some things that in your research that you found out that can add to what Michelle just shared?
Just on the topic of what can we do, I mean, I would add to that, that one of the things that I was personally invested in this book and that we both hope will be an impact is to get people to understand that this is not an individual choice, a problem of individual choice. Certainly people can try to make choices, but we're really facing more of a public health crisis, and we need to have institutional reforms that will make it possible for people to have better access to better food and health that way. And so for that to happen, what we're trying to do in the book is to make a convincing argument that will allow people to go back and revisit this issue of the quality of food in relation to genetic modification and be convinced, or at least be open to the possibility of recognizing there needs to be more research on this. Mm-hmm. One of my personal issues is trying to get what I call the reluctant constituencies, the people who are really not convinced that there's anything wrong with genetically modified foods, to rethink this. So we were in this really strange situation with genetically modified foods, where something like 80 to 90% of scientists don't think there's anything wrong with them. And the same percentage of people, 80 to 90% of the public, believe that there is something wrong with them. So we have this odd situation where the mistrust in science is huge here. And I've thought a lot about this and wondered, why is it that so many scientists are on board? And I truly think that there have been these historical things that have happened with genetic modified foods or the technologies of genetic modification that have made it hard for scientists to get on board the skepticism bandwagon when it comes to food. And so we map this out in the book. Like, what happened? First of all, why are doctors so averse to talking about food and using food as a treatment and a remedy? And we go into that in the book. we also look at, well, what happened with the science of these foods and how much of the scientific community sort of lumped food genetic modification in with all the other genetic modifications that are going on and that are very useful in medical research. And then how much of our mistrust is based on the fact that there has been what I believe and what many people who are in the non-GMO community believe, a real whitewash of the facts about genetic modification safety when it comes to foods. So we do map that out in the book, and in the hopes that that will go beyond the clinic and an understanding of how, yeah, we got to start right here in the clinic. If you're sick, there are steps, as Michelle points out, that you can take to really make changes that will help. But, you know, there are a lot of people who can't afford organic food. There's not organic food available in a lot of the country. And we have a whole food system and a whole medical system that needs really to open up about this and to do more work on this.
Wow, that's so powerful. Thank you both. We need to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. And then we're going to get more into this because both of them have touched a lot of my nerves about wellness and recovery, too. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And today we're talking with the authors of What's Making Our Children Sick? How Industrial Food is Causing an Epidemic of Chronic Illness and What Parents and Doctors Can Do About It. Michelle Perro, keep messing up your name. Sorry, call Michelle.
Call me Michelle. It's all good.
Okay. And Vince Ann Adams. And they are just this dynamic duo. I think it's awesome. They took both of their expertise and blended it into an amazing book. And I wanted to get back, Vince Ann, we were ending with you there when we had to take that break. A couple of the things that really bothered me is what I call food deserts. And I spend a lot of time in the Pacific Northwest, where we have awesome farmers markets where you get to talk to the real farmer. He's sitting there selling his kale or what have you, and he'll tell you how to cook it. Then I also spend time in Southern Florida, where I've been shocked at how difficult you would think that that would be an agricultural capital. It's changing, but I have to say, not fast enough for my taste. I've been shocked at how hard it is to find quality food down there. And it's just always amazing to me because the farmers market down there, it's not all organic. Some of these farmers set up tents and you look and they bring a big truck from a food wholesaler. And you see, you know, these big company names, boxes being opened and the food being out there. And just because you put it out in the hot sun doesn't make it quality food. So what can we do from a community standpoint to be heard? Because I often find even here in the Pacific Northwest, which is probably a little more vocal, a little more activated than some other places, it's still hard to get our point across that yes, a lot of these foods that we're eating are not good for us. Because I firmly believe a lot of the food I was eating before got me to that place of being susceptible to an autoimmune condition.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we talk about in the book. And that's what Michelle's expertise is all about. What is that connection between the food and the breakdown of your immune system? And we could go to that too. But just on this point of the food deserts and the fact that we're looking really, we should be thinking of it as a public health disaster. You know, there are layers. I like to think of it as like different layers of improvement that we could consider. There's the sort of Michael Pollan version of this, which is stop eating processed foods. Of course, processed foods have the highest concentration of GM ingredients, not to mention other bad ingredients. So getting off that is a huge improvement. We'll create a huge improvement in quality of health. And there are a lot of people who do understand that and who are really out there doing activism on it. But it is a shock to learn that even when you go local and you become part of the so-called, you know, it's a very elitist thing, but the food culture, it's shocking to find out that a lot of those people aren't doing organic. So, and that is another layer of problem that, you know, we are hoping in this book to convince people that it should be considered a problem. But again, my take on this is, and the target that I would like to hit with this, although I don't know that we'll be successful, is to get the medical community on board. I mean, I don't see the medical community as the enemy here. I see them as our savior, and we really need to get them to think about this public health disaster that's being caused by, even when we ship to real foods, if we're not eating organic, we're still probably getting exposed to a lot of pesticides and toxic ingredients that we don't want in our system. And so that's sort of the place that I see the most leverage happening. The fact is, our agricultural system changes when people get upset. I mean, the DDT wasn't eliminated from our agricultural system because the scientists realized that it was bad. It was eliminated because public activism got involved and mobilized for political change. So, you know, on some level, activism from the part of the community can go a long way to changing things.
I'd like to just jump in on there. There are things that we're doing, Sharon. The situation is not doom and gloom. So, for example, in our own county, we have a group called Conscious Kitchen that's bringing organic food to school lunches. We have a group working through California Guild, now we're talking about the state of California, that is creating legislation to ban herbicides from schools, parks, and children's daycares. I have a website that I'm executive director called gmoscience.org, which is committed to the effects of GMO food and its associated pesticides on health, with a who's who of advisors and super smart people that we go to when we need a review, that we are just putting up amazing content up there as we speak. And in addition, I am so on board with what Vincent is saying in terms of the medical students. I'm working on creating a group right as we speak. I mean, this is hot off the press. Your audience is the first to hear it and or see it. It's called Pediatricians Against Pesticides. And I'm forming a group of pediatricians because we have been commissioned for the advocacy for the health of children, right? You would think.
You would think.
And they're, because we are these lone rangers in isolated parts of the country, and obviously we can communicate through the internet. It's so easy now for us to organize. And so beginning to form a network and maybe a coalition and maybe a political organization to create these effects. And unfortunately, what I've witnessed personally in my own career, and as you have, as well as a patient and an advocate for change, is people have to work around institutions, particularly government agencies, that have put their guard down in protecting us. And we can go into that during this talk. Oh my God, the fox is guarding the hen house, to use a phrase. And people have learned to shortcut, bypass, circumvent, and create a parallel universe in what they're doing. And so trying to work in the system, but really creating strength around the system is what I've been focused on, either through our health groups and through parents. Nothing worse than having a sick kid to energize the mama bear in every woman.
Absolutely. So,
kind of a long-winded answer. But yes, change is afoot. I think, you know, there's room for optimism here.
Oh, I'm seeing more and more organic food. When, as I said, I've been 8 years living what I'll call bi-coastal. And going from where I thought 8 years ago I was having family ship me food. to now where it's more and more available. So I do see there's hope, but I also see there is a lot of not understanding. And I wanted to get into what it's really about. And that's what's making our children sick. Because I, as I read your book, I'm like, yes, it says children, but it's what's making us sick in my mind as I was reading that. Because a lot of us are told just sort of on the fringes that food is medicine. But finding good, solid places of support for that, places that I'll say we can trust, was a difficult process for me to find my, I'll say, my little community that helped me heal. Because it wasn't just, you know, me charging through guns blazing. It was, I found a nice community who supported my and lent their knowledge and expertise to what I was feeling was just, I'll say, my intuition and how I needed to heal. So let's talk a little bit about what can parents do. We talked about non-GMO and things like that, but let's get down to the real nitty-gritty. Because one of the things I see when I'm with my grandkids, and it was that with my kids too, a lot of times you send them to daycare, and that's where they're exposed to a lot of foods too. And it's hard when they're called out when you're saying, give just this food to my child only type of thing. So let's talk about some things that parents can actually hit the ground running on. And you know what? I just realized we blew past a commercial break. Sorry, guys. We need to take another one. I'm so invested in this topic. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour, but maybe you didn't know I'm also an author, mostly nonfiction. But recently I delved into the world of children's fiction with the Pinky Chenille series. Go over and check it out at pinkychenille.com. That's Pinky, P-I-N-K-Y, Chenille, C-H-E-N-I-L-L-E.com. Thanks. See you there.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm going to just jump right in. You guys know who we're talking to. They're awesome because I'm so invested in this topic. And as Michelle pointed out, the mama bear is out. Let's talk into what can we do as parents to change the way that we have food for our kids, and then also the greater community, because our kids aren't living in a bubble just in our home.
So where parents can get started, there's several fold. Number one is everyone has to get back cooking. Not just moms, the whole family. People have to get back in the kitchen, number one. And when moms say they don't know how to cook, dads too, moms and dads, children can start shopping and prepping and cooking. They love getting their hands in all that stuff.
Oh, they do.
As early as 3 years old. Get them in there, make a mess. It's okay, ladies. The kitchen's going to be a mess. It's not the end of the world. Get them cooking. Then what you have to do is you have to put the good food in the lunchbox. Okay, there's a whole thing on YouTube about lunchbox preparation and sending good foods to school. Then you have to talk to the daycare and the school about not giving little Johnny and Susie those goldfish and all those, you know, high fructose corn syrup snacks. And that mom or dad, and I say mom and dad, but it's usually the mom, can be the instrument for change. Because I had a conversation with Zen Honeycutt from Moms Across America. And she went into her kids' daycare and created a budget where they changed the food and came in under budget from the food that they had been giving their kid for snacks using organic, healthy snacks.
Wow.
Huge. But then parents can also get involved at the PTA level, not having their children's schools sprayed. Just yesterday, we stopped that through a bunch of moms in a town here in our county called Tiburon. They were about to spray and it was stopped. Because glyphosate is now labeled on Prop 65 in the state of California as a carcinogen, and it was able to be stopped at the 11th hour. So if moms, dads have the bandwidth to step up locally, absolutely. And then politically, you know, stepping up to the legislative level, which is harder for people with young children, you know. You know, let's be practical here. You've got three kids and you're working, and you're going to go to your legislature, you know, to complain. Gets difficult, easier as your kids grow up and you have more free time. But those are some just simple things that parents can start to do. But it all starts in the behavior parents model when the kids are little, at home, in the kitchen. Because that's how children learn, by modeling their parents' behavior. Simple. These are simple tools, but practical.
One of the things I want to throw out, that if you don't know how to cook, there are great videos, as you said, all over. You could take online cooking classes. I actually took one not too long ago about a plant-based diet. I grew up meat and potatoes. And so I really enjoyed this online. It was a 13-week course. And right there in front of you are these great, well, they were live and some were videos of how to cook vegetables I'd seen in the store. And some of them I, you know, had never even heard of. It was so much fun. And my granddaughter joined me for a couple of them too. So it's just really awesome. There's plenty of ways to learn to cook. If you're saying, Michelle, I don't know how to cook. So I'm not, how am I going to teach my kid? Yeah, Miss Ann.
Well, I was going to add that, you know, one of the reasons that we decided at the end of the book to devote a whole chapter to the women we're calling the warrior moms. Michelle has been calling them that forever. And I thought, boy, that's a great title. And I agreed that even though we know dads are often involved as well, more moms are usually. And, you know, I really felt like just doing the ethnography on these women, and everyone has experienced this, they get a lot of flack. They get a lot of pushback from people in their communities. If they're being too cautious about their children's health, or they're being overprotective of the kinds of food they're eating, even within their own families, they're often being given the skeptical treatment of grandparents who will take the kids out and give them all the things the kids are allergic to and then give them back to the parents. And so we really wanted to focus on this group in particular, who's been really taking the heat for a long time unfairly, and to say that, well, look, you know, we're with you and we think you're doing the right thing and you have to keep up and be vigilant about this. But look, here's a book that you can give to them as a kind of, another piece of your arsenal
to show them why you have to be vigilant, because the science is there, the evidence is there. And, so that was one of the purposes and one of the things we focused on in the book. So if you're one of those moms, go buy the book.
Exactly. And share it. And share. No, I know what you're saying. Even as I was going through my healing process, and I eliminated numerous foods from my diet, not just the GMOs, but the glutens and certain food proteins and things, became very sensitive to certain and strange foods. Some of them that you would think were incredibly healthy. So it was like, okay, but it's not for me. I'm sensitive to it. I got a lot of pushback from my own family about, oh, but it's a birthday, or, oh, it's a holiday. You could just have one. And I can understand how hard it is for a mom when the child's out of, I'll say, your immediate control, mm-hmm. to have the child be able to stand up and say, I can't eat that. That's really tough. So I agree with you, trying to get the larger community to understand the immediacy of this is critically important. That's just so awesome to me. Let's talk some more about, unfortunately, let's just say we do have a chronically ill child. What are some ways that you have found we can get other people on board besides just giving them the book? I remember one time I was at a particular doctor, and he had a solution that was to take part of my colon out. And I thought that was quite extreme. And I remember calling my own primary care at that time in tears, saying, oh my gosh. And he said, Sharon, calm down. That's a surgeon's answer to a problem he can't fix. We'll find the answer. And that was so profound to me. But that immediately then showed me how we have to be so careful in what we accept, and also what's lacking in the education of the people that we consider experts. So I sometimes just feel like I got very downhearted about this, and I appreciate the warrior moms. What can we do if we see that our own kids are sick? How can we stand up for them?
This is tough, because what most parents have is access to a traditional Western providers. They don't have access to integrative practitioners, which are naturopathic physicians, chiropractors, functional medicine doctors, acupuncturists, and Chinese medicine. And if they do have access to those providers, they're often not covered by their insurance, and parents need to pay out of pocket. So they're paying for two medical systems, which can be prohibitively expensive. So there are many things parents can do at home, but the truth is, when you have a complex, chronically ill child with some of the diseases that we mentioned in the book, and the kids we talk about the book, my kids with autism spectrum disorder, the autoimmune diseases like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, neurocognitive changes, severe asthma and allergies, that to fix them on your own is difficult and you need help. It often requires what we call integrative medicine, functional, holistic, naturopathic medicine. But it doesn't mean they can't start on their own. So I can't offer medical advice, because in holistic medicine, everyone is an individual. But I can say that healing starts with the gut. Repeat, healing starts with the gut. Your immune system, gut. Neurotransmitters, the chemicals that run your brain, gut. Primary line of detoxification, gut. And the two issues that Vincent and I talk about in the book, intestinal permeability and dysbiosis. If you have a kid who's chronically ill, 95% chance they have both of those issues. Their gut is leaky, their microbiome is imbalanced. So what parents can do is, beside what we've already talked about, they can use gut healing herbs, they can use gut healing homeopathics, they can begin with probiotics. You can get those easily at your natural food store. They can use digestive enzymes, natural food store. And if they have a kid on the spectrum or other neurocognitive changes, almost always take them off gluten and dairy, and they can begin to make these changes. So those are some of the healing things. And I often like to start with food. Food is medicine. So if they can begin to make smoothies for kids and put in the healing foods in the smoothies, like detoxifying plants such as cilantro, parsley. They can put in cucumber, celery, with some juices, because those veggies are hard to drink, beets, etc., that they can begin to heal their own child. The changes are profound. We have dad we talk about in the book, whose renal function went from 20% to 80% just going organic without treatment. So there are things that parents can do. But again, I caution, so much easier to work with a practitioner, somebody to help guide you. Otherwise, parents are out there struggling on their own. And so many women like you have figured it out, write books like you do, you know, but that can't be every mom. Every mom is not going to do what you've done. So guidance, but yes, those things I mentioned can begin even before they start working with their practitioner.
Absolutely. We need to take one more quick commercial break. Sorry, guys, they're coming rather fast here because I was so mesmerized at the beginning. I got off track on them, but we'll be right back.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour and Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And we've been just having this interesting and fascinating discussion about the health crisis that we're having with, well, it's their book is What's Making Our Children Sick. But I have to say, when I read it, I should change the title, What's Making Us Sick, because I just found so much of it I could relate to my own problems. And I agree with you, Michelle. Once I understood that it was starting in my gut, and I got over this idea that I had been eating a healthy diet because I had a salad with my soda pop, that honest, I thought I was eating healthy because you have a salad.
Diet soda, many years.
There you go. It's got the word diet, must be healthy. So let's talk a little bit. We only have, 5 or 6 minutes left. In the last few minutes, what are some other things that you would love to share with our audience? Buy your book, give it to the powers that be, right? That just came to me.
Thing.
Yes. What are some things that we can do as individuals to just share a little bit more?
I think if the biggest changes people can make is when they do start in the home. It's how much time you have. Don't give parents more than 3 things to do. So if they can just start in their home and just work on their food. If they can do their food and water, great. If they can do their food, water, and personal care and cleaning products, fabulous. If they can go a bit further and ask their neighbors not to spray Roundup like I did with my neighborhood, even better. Both my neighbors were spraying Roundup, and all 3 dogs that I own had died of cancer. Related? Maybe. We start there. If parents have a little more bandwidth and maybe only 1 kid, maybe they're not so busy, can they go to their PTA? Ask about their spraying policy. Ask them to stop spraying and use non-toxic means. And there are non-toxic means of controlling weeds. Kids love getting out there on the playground and pulling the weeds. Get kids involved at the school level. It's kids out of the classroom. They're running around pulling weeds. It's a great fun time. So if they can step into PTA, the PTA is a great place to get started. And I want to remind you, Sharon, that When I first started in all this in 2006, I was not an activist. If you had said, Michelle, are you an activist? I said, are you crazy? Busy mom, two kids. I was PTA chair. I had a busy practice of my own. And I didn't know the word no. Can you do that, Michelle? Oh, sure. Right? You know, oh, I guess I can do it. I just felt like I was just being pulled in every direction. I don't know if moms should necessarily do that, but if they can do one more thing. And I love starting at the school because kids spend 6, 7, 8 hours a day at school on those playgrounds. And they, because of their behaviors, are closer to the ground than grown-ups. So all that hand-mouth behavior, all those pesticide sprays, and they are going on at school, here in California as well, right in the mouth. And kids process it differently than we do, and they're more toxic from the effects. So this is a kind of common sense wisdom that I'd like to share with families.
I didn't even think about that. You're right. They are very close to the ground, and they're always sort of crawling on the ground, not just taking off your shoes. Seems like washing up afterwards too would be good. Vincent, what are some thoughts that you'd like to share with us in the last few minutes?
Well, you've sort of covered it all. Except
I know. We just go down rabbit holes here.
I would keep pushing on the need for a new medical model. We really, I don't know if there are any health practitioners listening to your show, but even patients who are going to their doctors, you know, really being activist in that space of the clinic and in relationship to the kind of medicine we have, you know, there is good science being done on the microbiome. There's good science being done on the problem of leaky gut or intestinal permeability that Michelle was talking about. We're sort of on the precipice of probably a revolution in healthcare once that science gets into the clinical practices. And so the more patients can push for information about that with their physicians and really demand some kind of attention to that. There are good doctors out there who can do this. And so, we talk about this thing called eco-medicine in the book, which is recognizing this paradigm in which the quality of the gut, the health of the gut is only as healthy as the health of the soil. And of course, food is the thing that moves between those two. It's a little bit dreamy to think that that might take hold, but movements, there's no only one way to do it, and that's to ask for it and push for it and put your money where your mouth is and put your money behind it. So buying organic and really holding the medical system accountable for this kind of movement forward.
Hashtag me too organic.
Yeah, exactly.
Organic, exactly.
I love that one. Yeah. And I'm a huge advocate here on self-advocacy, and that includes our children, of course. One of the things that was a major shift for me was finding my own tribe of medical people that believed the way I did. And sometimes that took firing doctors, and that was really hard. I was raised to be the white, what I called the white coat authority. And the first time I fired whom was considered one of the best specialists here in the local community, you know, you're so lucky to be seeing, but I kept going, but they are so anti everything I believe about taking off my shoes, even criticizing things like that, which don't make, you know, it's like, how is that going to hurt? It's not like I'm out doing something that's really going to hurt. So I'm a huge fan of self-advocacy and voting with your feet. I've been known to, one time a chronic doctor was talking to me, and I just stopped him. I said, wait a minute, do you have a chronic condition? And he said, no. I said, do you have a family member with a chronic condition? He said, no. I said, then don't tell me how I feel. Mm-hmm. Until you understand the difference between a cold, take two aspirins, you'll be fine in the morning, and a chronic condition, you really can't understand what I'm going through. Whether that may change the person's mind, I have no idea, but it made me feel good. So, because I said it in a nice way.
And you still have your colon.
Yes, I still have my colon.
Something right.
You know, the trick is, Sharon, to use the Western medical model for diagnosis and then the integrative medical model for treatment. Western medicine's great at diagnosing. And then once you get the diagnosis of whatever is befallen somebody, shift your thinking. I like to know the diagnosis too. I like to run tests, find out what's going on with somebody, and then treat integratively. that's the marriage. Vincent, there's our next book.
There we go, ladies. Absolutely.
My next book is on that problem of these gaps in the medical system and the mistrust of science. And it's just incredible what's going on right now. It's a whole huge problem.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Michelle and Vincent. This has been awesome. We'll have to have you back because we're out of time. And as you could tell, I'm equally passionate about your cause. Definitely. So in the last couple of seconds we have, tell everyone your website, where to get the book, and any little parting thoughts that you have.
Sure, be love to. Chelsea Green is our publisher, www.chelseagreen.com. Currently Amazon, bookstores. My website is www.gmoscience.org. And they can check that out and see what they think.
Awesome. And we'll have that written out up on Life Interrupted Radio. And Vincent.
Book is available, as Michelle said. My own website is through University of California, San Francisco. Vincent Adams, there's only one of me. You'll easily find me on the web.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Everyone. Oh, take to heart what we've been talking about today. I know it's a little bit different topic that we're getting into, but I'm absolutely passionate about it because that's what I know got me from having a chronic disease to being what I call a thriver. We're not just survivors here, you guys. You know that. Everyone, go have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me here next Friday night for another fascinating episode. And as always, enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com.